You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Looking to move to the cloud? Check out the Google Cloud Platform weekly podcast, where Google developer associates answer questions, get in the weeds, and talk to experts, customers, and partners about GCP. Click to learn more and subscribe to the podcast at g.co/GCP podcast. Again, that's g.co/GCP podcast. Folks, if you're an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or even if you have a side gig, let me introduce you to Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. Grasshopper lets you send and receive calls and texts from your new business phone number. That way, you can run your business from anywhere and respond to clients quickly with Grasshopper's mobile apps. Grasshopper, sign up today. Go to grasshopper.com/kick to get $20 off your first month. Again, that's grasshopper.com/kick. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. Abbott and Costello, Martin and Lewis, Allen and Rossi, the Smothers Brothers. My two guests today describe themselves as a postmodern take on the traditional stand-up comedy duo, and in my estimation, they belong right up there with the best of them. As fraternal twins who've been performing together since college, Randy and Jason Sklar, known as the Sklar Brothers, have developed an impeccable sense of comedic timing and a unique delivery all their own. They've been popular figures on the alt-comedy scene for years, and their stand-up specials have run on Comedy Central and Netflix. You'd also recognize them from their memorable roles on Entourage, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Grey's Anatomy, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Better Call Saul, and the list just goes on and on. Today, they'll join me in the studio to talk about how they work together, which one's idea it was to go into comedy in the first place, and why they don't want to be known just as a twin act. They talk about their podcast that riffs on the dumbing down of America, talk about a few of the characters who've become folk heroes to fans of the show, and what it all has to say about life in the age of Donald Trump. Plus, they talk about their new docu-comedy, Poop Talk, that uses humor to address one of the biggest social taboos of all. Coming up with the Sklar Brothers in just a moment. My guests today are two of the funniest people I've ever seen. The Sklar Brothers have recorded several stand-up specials for Comedy Central and Netflix. They host two incredibly funny podcasts, View from the Cheap Seats and Dumb People Town. But even if you don't know their comedy or their podcasts, you definitely recognize them because they are the funny twins from a million different shows like Entourage, Better Call Saul, It's Always Sunny, Grey's Anatomy, Those Who Can't, Cheap Seats and Sports Center on ESPN, and they're frequently on the Jim Rome Show. Now they have a new documentary coming out called Poop Talk. It's exactly what you think. And I'm such a big fan of these guys, and I'm so happy to finally have them on the podcast. Jason and Randy Sklar, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
It's so good to be here.
What a nice, great intro. Thank you so much. And it's just, we're happy to be here and happy to talk about all of it with you.
You know, I think I cornered Jason after a show a while back, and I'm kind of a big fan of you guys. And I was like, nobody does what you guys do. You were probably like, yeah, we're twins. So yeah,
I was touched.
That's kind of an obvious statement, I guess.
But I appreciated it, and I was touched because I remember.
We think about that stuff. We're like, how do we make what we do different? How do we make it, as comedians, you're always looking for, like, what's the most unique point of entry? how do we do what we do so that no one else can do it?
Yeah.
And so we're constantly thinking about that. And, you know, we want it to be organic. That was like people all along were like, one of you guys should be like the evil one and one of you the other.
We
kept saying to ourselves, that's not organic to who we are. I mean, we're human beings. And if we're going to tell realistic stories about how we deal with life, we can't then make one of us be an archetypal person and the other not, because that just doesn't allow for life to happen.
Yeah, it's really hard to describe your act and do you justice, because if I mention that you're twins, people might think that all you do is jokes about twin stuff or want to know which one is the straight man. And then I looked on your website at supersklars.com and I saw you describe yourselves as a postmodern take on the traditional stand-up comedy duo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank you. First of all, we don't go as the Sklar twins. We're the Sklar brothers, and that was a conscious choice. And
I think our approach was, look, the Smothers Brothers, they did that as well as anyone could ever do it. And we always say, you know, the Smothers Brothers' classic joke was mom loved me best. They were in a constant fight with each other. Our joke was that our mom loved the Smothers Brothers more than us. no, but I do think there is a thing where you say, those guys did it. They took it to the mountaintop. Mm-hmm. And why would we try to recreate or do a version of that? Like, what we want to do is the kind of comedy that we would watch. I'm fascinated sometimes when I hear about what bands certain musicians listen to.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're the bands that they listen to are very different than the music that they make or their favorite bands, if then something happened along the way where they said to themselves, this is the only type of music I can make. Or they're like, this is the type of music I can make that can make me money. We were of the mindset always that we don't want to make money, and thankfully we haven't.
Yeah.
No, but
we're really keeping truthful to that.
Yeah, we're honoring that original pact we made with the world. No, our goal, we wanted to create the kind of comedy, and this is what we say about everything we make. Is this something that we would watch
if
we weren't us?
Yeah.
Would we be fans of this? Because we are fans of comedy. We started as fans of comedy when we were teenagers.
Really?
So we were enormous. We were comedy nerds before it became cool to be a comedy nerd. That was back in the 80s in St. Louis when you didn't have YouTube. You didn't have access to a lot of comedy.
There wasn't a Largo, you know, which is like that we could go down and see like all these great people performing.
There wasn't an improv in every city in America.
There wasn't a comedy channel on Sirius Radio. There was nothing.
Yeah.
So we had to hunt for it and find it. And HBO was showing some stuff. And we knew about young comedian specials. And we just would dig into stuff. We loved it. And we knew what we loved. And so I think in the back of our minds, we said, what's the type of comedy? Can we create something that we would like if we weren't us? And we've tried to do that in everything. I think we've succeeded in most of the things. And maybe we have very specific tastes, and that's why we're not like household names across the board, but we're proud of what we made. And I, you know, even in this movie, even in this new Poop Talk docu-comedy that's coming out on the 16th, I still watched it. We screened it the last week, and I'm like, I would watch this.
Now, did you guys grow up in a funny family? Like, where did your interest in comedy come from?
Our dad was a really kind of personable guy, funny guy. Mm-hmm. He worked at a paper company, kind of like The Office. He worked at a place called
Dunder Mifflin.
Yeah, it was called Tension Envelope. Can you imagine that? Like, no one's last name was Tension. He worked at a place where tension was in the title.
Yeah, that sounds like a guy who's going to go Willy Loman any minute.
Yeah, just selling paper.
He was selling paper.
But he was a really good salesman. He kind of wasn't this guy who was he was not an academic. Our mom was an academic and is still, but was growing up an academic.
Like our mom was like a national merit semifinalist, got a full scholarship to Ohio State
University. Like, worked on computer curriculum in the 80s for our school district, and like she and her friends developed a very crude version of like email and stuff
in 84.
Wow. Yeah, like in terms of, you know, for like ninth graders telling sixth graders what to expect when they
so sixth graders would email anonymously seventh graders questions. And then the seventh graders would send back their responses. And it was so funny as they were developing
idea.
Isn't that great? And as they were developing it, the response from the school district before they did the experiment on it was, who's going to want to send letters like in the electronic mail is
the
it'll
dumbest
be dead
thing
on
ever.
Arrival.
Yeah. But what happened was people were able to anonymously ask questions and then answer them and have their questions answered. And so they were much more forthcoming. It was just a fascinating thing. So that's where she came from. Dad was much more of a people person, and he we would go with him on the weekends. Like, he'd take us down to work with him, and then we'd run errands with him. And truthfully, he would start talking to someone, like, go pick up his dry cleaning, and we'd be sitting in the back of the car with it running, you know, the way in the 1980s and 70s.
Just
your kids in a left your kids in a running car, like, here, go. Any pedophiles around want to steal these guys? They're right here. And he would just start talking to someone, and within 30 seconds, they'd be laughing or smiling.
Really?
And you say to yourself,
he's just
okay,
a funny guy.
There is value in making people laugh.
Yeah.
And so we saw that very early on. The other thing our dad did that was fascinating was he bought our family's business, like his uncle's business, selling alteration supplies and Velcro. And
yeah, he left the envelope company and then went to work for his uncle.
Okay.
In a family business that had been around since 1919.
Yeah.
For years, they sold nuns' habits, and then they
as Jews.
Was that like the ultimate revenge for the Inquisition?
Yeah, exactly.
like coming back at you.
50% markup.
That's
on
right.
these things.
That would take the these sisters down.
No, but he was way out of the habit business at that point. But I mean, he bet on himself to succeed. He took a big chance and went like very much into debt 3 years before we went to college. So he was like, I bet on myself that I'll make this money back, and I will make this money, and I'll pay this business off in 10 years. And he did. Wow. So he took a huge chance and a huge risk. So the combination of him being personable and making people laugh, and then also taking a huge leap and a huge chance, which is what we do every day in this business, had a huge impact on us.
Now, how did you guys decide to get into comedy? Did you both decide at the same time, or did one kind of lead the way on that?
I think we both loved it. Like I was saying before,
we were
teenagers. We were big comedy nerds. Then we went to college. We went to University of Michigan. We did some stand-up while we were there. We did some stand-up, you know, we hosted a show at the university, then we started doing stand-up in Ann Arbor, we started doing a little bit in Detroit, which is the first place we ever got paid, was Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And then as we were heading towards graduation, this is 94, so I swear to God, this is true. Someone called our, before we were, I don't know, sophomores or juniors, and said, called our room, our not dorm room, but it was the house that we were living in, and said, hey, we're part of this new thing called the Information Superhighway. Do you want to work on the Information Superhighway? And none of us knew what it was. So we were like, no.
No.
What the hell is that?
Sounds awful and boring.
I don't do construction.
Who's going to make any money doing that? It was basically our response. Like, we were like the people who said email's not going to work.
Right. Yeah. But I bring that up because at that time in the universe, if you paid a lot of money for a good education, which we did, and we worked really hard in college and tried to do well, you kind of had a couple routes you could go. You could go into business and go to like Wall Street and be like
investment banking,
right, stuff like that. You could go to medical school, which we were terrible in science, so we couldn't really do that. Or you could go to law school if you liked English, you liked writing. We were performative, so we felt like we could, you know,
maybe be trial lawyers. Who knows?
Yeah. Like, that was like a kind of thing that a lot of people just kind of filtered into that funnel, whether you wanted that or not. Now, you fast forward 10 or 11 years later, and a bunch of friends of ours who went to law school, like we're friends with Brad Meltzer, who's a fantastic we were talking about earlier before we started recording. He's a great author. He's hosted TV shows. He went to law school at Columbia, and he's not practicing law anymore. There are a lot of people we know who went to law school not doing it anymore because it wasn't what they really wanted to do, but they just didn't know what to do. So we applied to different law schools. We got accepted to different law schools. We were on our way to go to law school. But senior year, second half of senior year, we invited our favorite comedian, Andy Kindler, who's a brilliant comedian, still doing it today and so funny. One of the first alternative comics. He is one of the first comics to do comedy, do a joke on stage, and then comment on the joke that he just did. A lot of comedians do that now. Tons. Yeah.
So he became our favorite. We went and saw him perform in St. Louis and asked him to come to the University of Michigan, and he came. We opened up for him. We said, watch our act and tell us what you think about it. And we talked to him afterwards. He said, I think you guys are really funny. I don't think that's all reflected in your material. Huh. You probably are going to have to lose a lot of your material.
If not
all of it. Go to a coast. Get to like New York or L.A. I'm in L.A., but you guys can go to New York and work on it. Get into a comedy scene that will push you guys to make use of why you're funny just hanging out right now. And in a couple of years, you guys could be on TV. That's like all we needed to hear. And so we called our parents that night and said, you know what? We're going to defer our acceptance from law school. Because he didn't really blow smoke up our ass. He was kind of real about you got to lose his material. but you have something that's interesting.
Advice.
Totally. Yeah. And I think we thought to ourselves, if we don't try this, we will live the rest of our lives thinking, what if we had, what would our lives be? And there are definitely times now when, you know, we struggle and we work hard and we go through times that are really tough.
So like this movie's coming out and we think this movie is great. It could be the type of thing that could catch on or not. Or not. You never know. It's like it could not happen.
We sit here like 4 days before it comes out in theaters, which I don't anticipate a lot of people seeing in theaters. But if you see it in theaters or video on demand, that would be awesome. But like we're sitting here not knowing which direction it could go. I think the people who made the Black Panther are like, we about to make some money. Now, we're of the mindset where we probably should have called our movie The Brown Panther.
That's right. That would have been a better.
Or The Shape of Toilet Water.
Or I would have gone with Lady Turd.
Just to capitalize on the success of these other movies. No, but we're sitting here saying we don't know. We have no clue.
It's a risky business. Even when you've made it, it's a risky business.
Of course. And so, you know, there are times where I'm like, maybe it would have been better on our constitution and our anxieties would have been lessened if we were just funny lawyers. But I am very glad because I think we didn't do this. We didn't get into this business to be famous. That was not our goal. Our goal was to work and support ourselves with our art. However that is, we had no aspirations. I don't want to be a gazillionaire. I don't even want to be a millionaire. I just want to be comfortable, know that I can pay for my kids to go to college and know that I can live out the rest of my days without wondering if I can make my rent. That's it. That's it. That's all we care about. And
get to work
and go to work. And get to do the thing and get to work. Get the privilege of getting to make things. And
you do feel a little like sometimes like you're, I don't know. I watched Bonnie and Clyde a while back and you're like, when they're on the run, they only have like a certain number of banks that they can rob before the police are going to get them. So you do feel like on some level, you're like,
as we get older,
as we get older, I'm like, are we robbing banks here? What's happening? Like we're going to get caught and then the whole thing's going to be done.
Yeah. Or there's a moment where you're out there, you know, we don't do the road very much, but we do it. We for a new project we did, for another thing we did, for Audible.com, which is coming out in the next month or so.
Next month, yeah.
It's called Sklars and Stripes. That's the name of it. It's a 10-chapter audiobook about really doing stand-up comedy on the road. Whenever we go to a town to do like a weekend of shows at a comedy club, we always give ourselves the challenge of, hey, I wonder if we can write like 5 to 10 minutes of comedy about this town by experiencing the town, by talking to people about the town. What are they grappling with? What's the town's personality? What are the social issues of the town?
So this is an extension of, what was it?
Finding
the Funny.
So we did a pilot for the Travel Channel called Finding the Funny. Thank you. And this, it just was a little too edgy and political for the Travel Channel. This is a chance for Audible to go
Just do exactly what we want to do. So
each chapter is about 30 minutes, give or take five, or maybe some less, but some more. And in each chapter, you hear the plane, or you hear us step into town and have our preconceived notions about how it's going to go. And we had like two documentaries in mind when we were making it. One, what is the comedic process? How does an observation in the field turn into a funny thought, turn into a joke, turn into a full-on bit that we can do together?
Yeah, that's really interesting to me.
Fascinating. The comedic process is so cool. Then the other side of it was, what's it like to live in these 10 cities? The 10 cities we did were San Diego.
So we did San Diego, Madison, Portland, Kansas City, San Francisco, Tulsa, Denver, Bloomington, Houston, St. Louis, our old hometown. So those 10
and
cities.
My hometown, Houston.
Houston.
Not
Houston.
St. Louis.
Never been to St. Louis. Houston was awesome. Yeah. We were there for a comedy festival.
And to be there after the hurricane was pretty unbelievable.
After the Astros won was kind of an exciting time. So the crazy thing is we started this, the first weekend that we did was in San Diego the weekend after the 2016 election. Now.
Oh.
And so, what followed was the next 13 months, we went to 10 cities and did this, and it was the 13
most
tumultuous months in our nation's history that we can remember.
Now, so a new storyline emerged within the documentary, which is the politics of our country. Now, we didn't only go to blue cities. We went to some blue cities and red states. We went to some red cities and red states. And we feel very strongly. We have strong political views. We're definitely liberals. You know, I think it'd be hard to be a comedian and not be a liberal. I know some of them, but I do think that like there is this, if you're an artist and you're fighting for the arts, it's kind of hard to be on the other side. But we don't hate people who come from the other side. We were just outraged at the guy who was in charge.
Right.
And I think we know a lot of people who are Republicans who are angry at what's going on right now.
Truthfully, I think
it's
like,
interesting because for me, it's very hard to understand.
Sure.
It's hard for me to fathom how like an American from this place sees it one way and an American from another place sees it entirely different.
Well,
like,
it's because
like a mirror opposite.
Well, because we've eliminated like universal news that we can all trust.
Right.
Because they've attacked the concept of reality,
which is terrible. But the idea that like in this year when everyone has retreated to their bubbles, right and left, people retreat to their bubbles, we left the bubble to go
because comedians, you got to if you get a job, you got to go.
Yeah, you guys want to go to Houston? Yeah. Yeah, we're going to Houston. Well, how did Houston vote? I don't know if they voted the way we voted, or not everybody. Or hey, you're going to go to Tulsa? How did Tulsa vote? You're going to go to
Kansas City.
You're going to go to Indiana, Mike Pence's home state. And he was there when we were there, and it was like he was at the airport when we were there. I mean, and caused our plane to be late. The jerk. And you know, like you talk about Madison, Wisconsin. Well, Wisconsin went red, so you know there were some things about Wisconsin. How does Madison fit into this sort of outer rim of redness and is a blue sort of creamy communist center in a larger, more crusty outside. So we figured all this stuff out and just the timing of it was fascinating. It's called Scholars and Stripes. And then we're going to pull about 7 minutes of stand-up from each – 6 minutes, 7 minutes of stand-up from each city and make a comedy album. So we're in the midst of like editing that right now.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed over the years that your comedy more and more seems to be drawing from your experiences as parents and – explaining the world and life to your children, which makes me wonder, how do you sit your kids down and explain Trump and everything that's going on in the world right now?
I'm like,
what do you say to them?
I definitely am unfiltered about it. Like my son is like, is Trump a bad guy? And I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I don't even color code it. I'm not even like, maybe to some of his people he is.
Yeah.
I'm
but like, there's too much of that already.
Like, he's like an angry
everyone's
baby.
Making
yeah.
Excuses
like we can't, normalize
it.
I'm not going to normalize it. I'm like, this is not, now if they said to me, is George Bush a bad guy? I would say, well, when he was in office, I think he listened to Cheney too much and he wasn't the brightest guy. But I look at him now and I'm like, you know what? He's just a faith-based guy who I disagreed with some things. I don't love that he got us into the Iraq War. I'm not in love with some of the things he did, but I think that he cared about the political process,
and I think he cared about the country.
He cared about the country. You can't really fault his love of the country. So I was like, this guy who's in there right now only loves himself and his rich buddies, and I would argue he is just a disgusting person.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be honest with my kids where I'm super diplomatic about a ton of other things. I'm going to be as honest as I am about like drugs and alcohol. Like, I don't want you doing them. Even if I know that like sometime, some point they're going to come into your life, I'm going to say it's bad for you. Or I'm going to say this is bad. We don't lie. We don't cheat. Yeah. We don't call each other names. We certainly don't disparage other races. We don't disparage, I have a son. I'm like, if a woman says no to you, a girl says no to you, whatever you're doing, if you're hitting her, if you're doing any, if you're running around, it's a silly game and she's throwing stuff at you. Someone says no, you stop.
Yeah.
Like there are some basic things you tell your kids.
Basic things that like the people at the top of our country can't get at this point right now. The Rob Porter scenario is like a classic example of like you don't get it. Like I watched Kellyanne Conway on TV and she's like, well, a stronger person would have handled that. It's like, what are you? Are you joking me? Like, again, it upsets me because I'm like, I now have to sort through all this and explain to my kids that is wrong. Yes, she's a woman and what she's saying is flat out wrong.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with the Sklar Brothers when we come back in just a minute.
In a world consumed by breaking news, one man has the focus to cut through the...
The president's losing a Twitter fight to Juul.
To cut through the...
ISIS won Powerball? Who sold them a ticket?
To cut through...
Where are kittens even getting opioids? Oh, he did the accent. It's much more racist if he did the accent. A chipmunk attacked a synagogue, and he knew it was a synagogue.
John Oliver is back to put aside distractions and get to the bottom of...
Wait, Harambe again? I literally don't understand how that's possible. Did he come back? And then they got him again? Was the same kid involved?
Last Week Tonight with John...
This one just says run.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Every week starting February 18th on HBO.
In and all of this kind of leads into your podcast, Dumb People Town, which yes. I want to talk about just for a few minutes sure. before we wrap up.
Sure.
It sort of posits that the world is getting stupider by the day. And I guess I would say that you guys are sort of the Studs Terkel of the Trump era, chronicling the dumbing down of America.
Yeah.
Give us a couple of examples of the kind of stories that you talk about on DPT.
I mean, Dumb People Town. Well, we say the world is getting dumber.
Or dumber is getting louder.
Or dumb is fighting smart and dumb is stronger. It has dumb strength. And it's just winning.
Like if there's a naked guy with a machete taking a poop in a pool that isn't his in Tallahassee, Florida, we'll be there to make fun of it.
If there's a woman who's like, yeah, I can pull my kids at 30 miles an hour with my Subaru in the back and they're in a wagon
attached to the thing around this roundabout. Okay, that's it. You know, if a guy takes drugs and goes up and just hangs out and climbs up a tree and it takes the entire fire department and to get that. Those stories to us.
Those are your people.
Yeah, those fascinate us because then we want to try and understand
how did this person get there? Who let them there? Who's the dumbest
person?
What were
the 10 hours? Yeah, who's the dumbest person in the story? What were the 10 hours?
It's surprising who it ends up being. Maybe the cops in the end of the story.
Many times it's cops, many times it's just the people themselves.
I mean, the best story about, and I guess because we've traded in this world, is Jay's friend has a friend who's a cop.
Oh, yeah. I was at a party or just a brunch at a friend's house and guy's like, my friend's a cop. His kid's coming. He's coming over and he's got some amazing stories. He would probably love your podcast. I was like,
we should get him on.
We should. I'm like, I want to talk to this dude. And so he came over and I was like, what is it like, man?
When you're out there in the, are you sensing that it's different? Are you sensing what we're kind of feeling right now?
He's like, I'm going to tell you something that is going to blow your mind. I was like, dude,
bring it. I mean, you don't expect to get that information at a
brunch.
You know what I mean?
Tell me. He's like, I could solve all of the problems in the world.
You're like, how?
How? He's like, we don't need guns. We don't need tasers.
We're like, I'm listening.
We don't need batons. We don't need anything. The way you talk a crazy person down and a violent person down from their rage, Doritos. I was like, man, what are you talking about? I'm like any kind of Dorito, like Cool Ranch. He's like, no. It has to be the original Doritos, the original red nacho Doritos. He's like, I'm going to start carrying 50 bags in my trunk. I'm like, what are you talking about? You have to be basing this on empirical fact. If you're coming so strong.
If you have
thing,
that strong of a theory.
He said, I cannot tell you the amount of times. He's like, I want to take people with me to show them. Crazy guy, group of people around him, dangerous. Like, we don't know, a drunk. We don't know what's going to happen. I walk over with a small bag of Doritos and say, hey, man, calm down. Put down the knife. I'm going to give you a bag of Doritos, and we're going to talk about this.
Now, does that count as entrapment? Like, is there a legal precedent on the use of Doritos?
Knife to the ground 100% of the time, sitting down, eating Doritos, talking about it. He's like, there would be no police brutality. He's like, it is, people have this weird, it's, and I likened it to,
like
I was like, it's t-shirt. Like when you're at a sporting event and they start taking out the t-shirt cannon, all right?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many t-shirts are in my drawers
we have to do this bit on stage.
That I never wear, that I just never wear. I'm like, I don't need these stupid t-shirts. I have way too many t-shirts. The t-shirt you get out of a t-shirt cannon is not a great American Apparel shirt. Yeah. It's not a soft,
it's an ill-fitting.
It's like a toy you want at the carnival.
Yeah.
It's
like never, a Hanes, like always too big, no size fits anyone. Thing that shoots out of a cannon.
It's like a toy that the kids get at the dentist's office. You're like, is that Barbie doll just made of cancer? What is that?
Get it out of here. You're going to lose it in like 10 seconds.
Plastic, not of this
earth. Fuck the dentist for giving this to you. You're so angry. You're like, because now I got to throw it away. I got to find this stupid toy. Find the head that just rolled off. As soon as the t-shirt cannon comes out, me included, I stand up. I'm like,
over here! Get it to me. I want it so bad.
You jump up and down. You're like,
it's
like
the idea of winning something or getting something. And that's all we need to do to change.
You're like a guy. Someone
solve police brutality. It is such or just any of that stuff. Like you wouldn't have Colin Kaepernick kneeling. No. Like everyone would stand for the national anthem. It would be. Can you imagine just solving that with Doritos?
Yeah.
But we feel like it is our duty as comedians to try and
fight the dumb
the dumb with comedy. And so we get people like Pete Holmes and Jamie Lee and John Hamm and
Keegan-Michael
Dan Harmon, Keegan-Michael Key, and just really
Tony Hale, all the Jason Mantzoukas, Tiffany Haddish, run through the list of all of the guests that we've had in the last like year, probably done about close to 60 episodes. Just amazing people riffing with us, and the stories come up. We don't know the stories. The guest doesn't know the stories. Our co-host, Dan Van Kirk, who's amazing, he's the only guy who kind of has it broken down, and he's brilliant about it. And we've really built this kind of amazing community out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, got about 20,000 people on a Facebook page, DonPeopleTown/Facebook
page. Yeah, a lot of active fans out there.
And what's crazy is some of the people we've spoken about in the stories
have
now commented. They've joined the Facebook page and now commented on the Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah. Tell the listeners who Jan Flato is.
Jan Flato. Flato. It's a guy in...
Or is it Jan or is it Jan? It's the guy.
It's Jan, but it is. We have a cousin
Jan
calls Flato.
Himself Jan? Okay.
Jan Flato makes him sound like he like wrote all of John Tesh's music.
Jan Flato. Okay. Like we could do a bunch of Jan Flatos. So Jan Flato or Jan Flato is a guy who in Florida who had a Russian girlfriend. It's not clear whether he paid for her or not to be his girlfriend. They went to a casino. He gave her the money. She put it in the slot machine, $100 on the slot machine. She pressed the button. And so it felt like a pair doing that. If we win and strike,
we'll
split it in half.
They win $100,000,
which for anybody is a tremendous amount of money. She said, I'm going to go up and get the money and I'll see you right back here. She gets the money. And the rule is at the casino, if you press the button, that money is yours. It doesn't matter where you got
the
money.
I don't know how she knew this.
She got up to the front, got the money, got security guards and said, keep him away from me, and got out to the car and left with his money. So this poor guy, we felt so bad for him. Yeah. And then we saw a picture of him and we're like, this is the greatest human being we've ever seen. He looks like a guy that owns 3 jet skis and none of them work.
He looks like a guy who has been fired 3 times from the Guitar Center and keeps getting rehired.
He looks like a guy who believes that the sun is flat. You know what I mean? This is Jan Flato.
He's like an unlicensed doula.
A.K.A. Jan Flato. So he became this guy that we talked about in such glowing and fun terms, and we put the picture up whenever we do a live show. He has now joined the Facebook page, and he'll just comment on other stories and things that are going on, and we're like, oh my God, this universe is now wrapped in and folded in on itself in the most poetic way ever. And so we love this podcast, and it's reached a lot of people.
Yeah, what is it about Florida? You said he's from Florida, and so many of these stories, it seems to be like the Bermuda Triangle.
Have you been to Florida?
Stupid drunken madness.
Yeah,
a few times.
My wife's stepdad lives in Sanibel Island, which is on the
west
coast.
That's like a nice.
That is nice, but we've driven across the like Alligator Alley, driven across the center of down Okeechobee, like below the Panhandle, right in the center, and. It is like another world. I can only describe it as like I don't think they're living by the same rules. Like if you don't have a machete, you're looked at like you're what is this guy's problem?
It's like it's like the Australian outback a little bit. And then the other thing about it is that Florida and Oregon, those are two states that release their police blotters and make them public.
Okay.
So most of the stories come from. I'm sure if every state had it, you'd be like a Missouri man, and you'd be like, here we go again.
I can't believe Arkansas is doing this again. Although we've had stories from all over.
In fact, today I think you had one from Russia.
Russia.
There was a guy who drove a tank through a store to get
just to steal a bottle of wine. Yeah,
and there was also you had a woman who married the ghost of a 300-year-old pirate. And I thought about that because so often on this show you have people who have some story where. They married their pet, or they want to marry an inanimate object.
Right. Yeah,
Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, yeah, whatever it is. The religious right never gets pissed off about that. That's never the thing that's threatening the institution
of marriage. Exactly.
Two guys in love.
Right.
That's what's weird.
And this is
that's the full frontal attack.
What if I told you this woman was having butt sex with the Statue of Liberty? Would that change your opinion?
Yeah. Well, but the
religious right?
The idea that you bring that up is it puts all of these silly stories into a actual relevant context.
Yeah.
What you just brought up is the same way that we feel. And so we feel like this show, even though it's silly at times,
it's a jumping off point to some deeper discussions. Mm-hmm. And it is like 1 hour. We try to hit the 1 hour mark whenever
we do it as close to like an hour mm-hmm. 10 as possible. Make it just be this really wall-to-wall comedy. If you're exercising for an hour, listen to this. Yeah. It'll help you get through. If you're if you have to commute for an hour, and a lot of people do, listen to this and it'll get you on your drive.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about this new documentary that you guys both host and executive produced called Poop Talk. This might seem a little bit out of your wheelhouse. So tell us, how did you get involved in this project?
I mean, it wasn't our idea initially. Our friend Aaron Feldman, who directed the movie, came to us 2 years ago and said, I have an idea for a movie.
I want to do something on the history of poop.
Mm-hmm. And we were like, goodbye.
No, thank you.
Because we just didn't, I mean, you've seen our act, you see what we do.
That's
we're like,
not
how does it fit?
Yeah, poop jokes aren't really your thing normally. Unless it's in the context of like raising two kids and something like that. Maybe.
Or making fun of that type of humor.
Yeah.
You know, like we would take
twist it.
We would twist it and take a shot at it. So he said, well, just tell me what type of movie you would make on this subject. And we wrestled with it over a weekend, talked to each other a lot, said, can we do this? What if this movie is huge? And then this is the thing we're known for. It's just a poop movie. Can we live with that?
Well, the best case scenario.
That's the best case scenario. If it succeeds, which is what you always go to do something to try and make it succeed.
If it fails, then we've wasted a ton of time.
You never want to work on something that you're hoping gets buried and doesn't succeed. So we said, we got to make a movie that we're proud of. And that we would like. So it would be an honest, funny discussion about why is this something that everybody does? It's maybe the most universal subject we've ever tackled. Everyone does it.
Yeah.
And yet people don't talk about it. Why, where are we in the world right now where and we have actually found evidence of, you know, we live in like kind of a bit of a Tinder profile society, i.e. let's get the high angle shot of me.
Yeah, exactly.
So that I look
and the good
best.
Filter. And and people don't want to see or show the world any part of them that might be quote unquote ugly or vulnerable. We would argue it's your most human. I mean, everybody does it. Like Cat Williams poops and so does Oprah, all right? And they probably both smell the same. The question is, you know, do we want to imagine those people doing it and just how do we reconcile it? And so you kind of start to, you know, you dig into this discussion, you realize, okay, poop is the entry point. The entry point is through someone's anus. Can we then spread out and say something about the entire human experience? Mm-hmm. Now, I guarantee you, we've even read reviews. People have reviewed the film. There will be people who will see the subject matter and just simply dismiss it.
Right.
They just will. They'll be like, I'm not going to see this. It's about poop. It's juvenile, da, da, da. But if you watch the film like you did, I mean, it's not really just about that. It's kind of about a lot of other things.
And it's interesting because, you know, it's such a taboo, and the only people who are comfortable talking about it are either comedians or doctors, who you have both in this movie.
Right. And I think the idea is that comedians, and you watch a lot of comedy, you understand this, you know, comedians are like amateur anthropologists. We study human behavior and try and then understand what is quirky about it or what are we getting wrong? What are we doing wrong? And then show that back to everybody.
Or why is this incongruency still accepted in our world? Mm-hmm. And so we thought this is a little hiccup in our evolving.
Because the truth of the matter
world.
Is if you do poop, your body is actually functioning beautifully.
Yeah.
That means your body is taking the nutrients from the food that you eat, dispersing the good things to your body that it needs, energy for your brain, for your blood, for all those other things, for your muscle and all that stuff. And it's getting rid of the stuff it doesn't need. Mm-hmm. And all that is just you getting rid of the stuff you don't need. And of course, there's all this other stuff surrounding it. And
there's shame and there's obviously the smell and the sounds. And we talk about it.
But comedians are so great about shame because they don't mind. Pete Holmes talks about it in the movie. He says, you know, as alpha males, comedians, we're so evolved.
Or females.
We're so evolved as human beings that the alpha male can stand on stage and reveal his or her, like, basically worst, most vulnerable
weaknesses
and stand in a very, you're like strong weak.
Yeah.
You're weak strong. We call it like weak strong. He called it like weak strong. We were talking to him today earlier and he was like weak strong. That is what it is. It's like your weaknesses make you strong in that instance because you're not afraid to show that. And I think that is why comedians were perfect people to talk about this subject with.
It reminds me of a conversation I had a while back with a woman who was a mortician of all things and she's trying to destigmatize death and funerals and approach death and funerals the way people outside of the U.S. do. It's a lot like that because, you know, just like getting grandma's corpse out of the house, you know, you want to get it poop flushed out of sight and out of your home as quickly and discreetly as possible. But you're doing, like you said, a real disservice to yourself because I had a doctor friend who once told me before you flush, you should always look in the toilet because it's one of the best ways your body can tell you whether you're dehydrated,
okay. Yes. Eating right,
if you have early signs of disease. I mean, there's a lot of information.
I thought you were going to say get your poop out of the house the same as your grandma's corpse. Make sure you bury it with a very tasteful ceremony.
In the backyard.
No, but that's a great point. And speaking about death, you know, there are things surrounding death that we as comedians talk about all the time. We on stage say, like, everybody's going to die. In our new special,
there's a point in the stage
where we say everyone in this room is going to die.
Tonight.
You will all die tonight. No, but I mean, we broach that subject. Comedians aren't afraid to broach that subject. Yeah. And I think, you know, once you start thinking about, okay, quality of life versus death. I mean, yes, people can be kept alive for 170 years if you're on a machine. If you're on a machine, a machine can help you breathe and you can be sitting there and be kept alive for years and years. But is that really living? It's good because, I'm sure your mortician friend definitely can answer your mortician friend or the person you spoke to could answer
your little mortician friend. I'd love to get her in here.
Yeah.
Hear what she's going to say about this one. Never bring her formaldehyde.
No, but why do we both turn into Dennis Miller? That person has a lot, sort of the stigma and the worry of death. They see that as just like another passage of this is like as part of the beautiful cycle of life, as opposed to be something to fear and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a friend of mine who's kind of this crazy alt-writer who says a lot of dumb shit 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. Every now and then, though, he'll come at me with some kind of pearl out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And one day, not that long ago, he said, the digestive system is very humbling. And I was like, he's right.
He is right.
I mean, even Hitler apparently had like horrible irritable bowel syndrome.
They called him Schindler because behind his back. He didn't like it. And then he became a dictator.
That's right.
Yeah. But when you picture the scariest man in the world, the most horrible sociopath in history, just running out of a meeting, holding his pants because he's about to shit himself.
The Fuhrer over it was terrible.
The sound in the Fuhrer.
The sound of the Fuhrer.
It's just a farting noise.
Look, that's why he built the bunker. He wanted to go underground.
Yeah, it's like that's how much he didn't want people to smell his shit. Is he built a bunker underground?
And he said, "Keep Eva Braun out of here."
He probably absolutely wrecked the bunker bathroom, and then was like, "I got to commit suicide. I got to kill
nobody.
Myself.
I can't be around when Eva Braun steps in."
No amount of paint thinner.
I don't want Lainey Riefenstahl to take a picture of this.
Jesus,
it's so fun to make fun of Hitler. It's so fun to belittle Hitler with comedy. Yeah. It makes me laugh.
I'm calling him Schindler from now on.
Schindler.
No, but on the other hand, of course, you have Kim Jong-un's dad, Kim Jong-il. If you go to North Korea, like apparently no one believes that Kim Jong-il ever defecated.
That was
like some propaganda.
And then Dennis Rodman.
People believe that.
And then Dennis Rodman went to
North Korea
because he was one of the only people that they allowed in there. And he got drunk and apparently defecated in the hallway of the hotel that he was staying.
Oh, I know. Really?
So not in
I
his bathroom, but in the hallway.
And it was the actual improvement to the hotel.
Yeah, it was.
That was the weird part.
No, but I was like, if you were like a sort of, I guess.
What
like
did Dennis Rodman shit smell
like? What was in there,
like
tons of cocaine and Fruit Loops. Yeah, kimchi. I was gonna say some Fruit Loops,
like a flip flop, like a shower
one shoe. Shower shoe.
Vodka, badass vodka.
Some people have rules about doing number two in public restrooms. Are you guys like that?
Or? Before we made this movie, Randy and I were super private about the poop.
I just wouldn't do it out in public. And we tell a story in the movie about going to camp and first time away at summer camp, 14 years old. You're at basically the peak of your body changing, your own personal shame and all that stuff. And you're in a cabin with like 20 kids and, the new kids. And you just were like in a shared bathroom. It was like our nightmare, both of us. And I didn't poop for like 14 days. And I'm just eating. It was a Jewish summer camp. So you're eating Jewish food, which is the worst thing you can keep piling into your system. I can't believe like my kidneys didn't break down. But it was like, and that was our attitude before. Then we made this movie, and I took a river rafting trip with my family the summer after we had completed basically principal shooting on this movie. And it was a situation where you're with four other families, be that you just met, and there is essentially a glorified bucket you have to poop into that with a little tent around it, but it's open and you can see the river. And I will say that, like, even knowing that, okay, there's a line of people to get in there after you do your business, and so
It's not getting flushed away. It's right there. It is, again, to look at that, we went through this whole experience of talking to people and whatnot, and I came out on the other side of that thing, and some of my most beautiful, most peaceful moments were sitting on that groover and doing my business while I was looking out at the river, and I thought to myself, man, I've come a long way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you both have kids, so I have to assume that any day you make it to any restroom is probably a win.
When they're little, your parents, young parents, are always like trading. That's what you trade in kids' poop.
I mean, my daughter is 100% potty trained, knows how to poop on the toilet, will poop on the toilet, can do it. But she now is going through a phase where she wants to go put on a diaper and poop in the diaper again. And we've talked to our doctor, and she's like, don't, you know, push it. Don't shame. Don't create issues around it. So we're just kind of supporting it and riding this little wave out. I'm sure she won't do that into her teens. But, like, it is an interesting thing because I thought, okay, she's potty trained now. We don't have to necessarily do that. But here I am still back in that game again. And as a parent, you learn to deal with it. It kind of, you're like, oh, okay, I now know how to breathe out of my mouth and not take in any smell. I now know how to do this. I'm seeing it up close. It's, you start to like, it becomes less crazy.
It gets demystified.
Yeah.
Maybe she's onto something. I mean, I'm just waiting for the day when like dot-comers in Silicon Valley decide that diapers are somehow a productivity hack.
Yes, a productivity. Yeah. You don't want 20 minutes of you in the bathroom, or they'll just start putting computers, you know, like full on computers in the bathroom.
Yeah, the diaper
is literally swing the laptop over as you're sitting down.
There is still cleanup involved in the diaper. So there, you can't get away from it. Like, if there was a tube from underneath your, like, that, like, bouncy ball that people sit on for their backs.
Oh, yeah.
If there was a tube that came out of that ball.
Fills the ball.
And went down. Like a suction, like at the bank, like, where they, the bank, when you send, like, a deposit.
Boom, boom, a pneumatic system.
Yeah. And you could just press a button for suction right when you knew when it was coming out. And it was just like, boom. And then it was, like, also doubled as a bidet that just shot water right up there. That's hack
that
my
would,
life.
That would be, like, the new silicone. Like, have you tried this? That would be a reason.
There's a poop ball. Have you done the poop ball?
Yeah. So there's a reason to work at that company.
That makes me think of probably what I would say is the most out of touch Hollywood first problems moment in this movie. Yeah. You have a number of very big comedians waxing about their fancy Japanese toilets that spray and blow and play music,
not even that fancy,
psychoanalyze you.
By the way, I think it's $80. Yeah. It costs so
what?
It's just because you
wait,
just
what?
Buy a cover. You buy just a seat cover.
Oh, you just
cover.
Buy the seat cover.
Yeah, so it's cheap, my man.
I thought okay.
It's not that.
It's not some crazy like $5,000 Japanese toilet. No,
this is like a thing that's
an aftermarket thing you buy for your toilet.
You put it on your toilet.
Okay.
It's like aftermarket rims for your car.
And what does it do? It like
sprays, heats the seat.
Heats the seat. Wow.
It like has a thing of water that then can spray and undulate and clean you from underneath, and you kind of just wire it through your toilet, and it's like a wonderful thing, and it's not that expensive, and you know, I think it is sort of like a newfangled bidet.
I got to be honest, I'm a little bit traumatized by one once in Japan. I was in Tokyo, and I had never seen one before, and there are all these buttons. I was so fascinated. I was in my hotel room playing around with it, standing in front of it, and I'm pushing buttons, and then suddenly, like, this little stick, almost like an early pregnancy test or whatever, starts to move out from under the rim. And it's like the theme music from 2001 was playing as I was watching
it. And you sit on it.
And I'm just standing there. And then all of a sudden it like nails me right in the crotch with a hot stream of water.
That's not good.
And I fall on the ground laughing.
Yeah, I know.
I can understand why. Yeah, I mean, I think that we were talking to Dr. Drew, who's in the movie
well.
We were talking to him. And he said, you know, one of the stigmas about a bidet, we said, when do you ever think a bidet might make its way to the United States? Because it's kind of rare, weird that it wouldn't be here. And he said just there is the stigma that, like, people in Europe don't shower and that the bidet is, like, their only shower. And so for some reason it's seen as a less than version.
I think it's the toilet lobby. Strong lobby.
Yeah, it's like,
it's just like how they killed the electric car. Remember who killed the electric car? Who killed the bidet? That's one of the questions that's raised in this film.
Do you think we'll ever adopt the hole in the ground, like 90% of the rest of the world?
Poop hole is pretty... You know what's crazy to me is that poop hole could work as an alt, as just like a second thing. Like, I guarantee you that it won't happen. But, you know, in public places, poop hole would be great. Put the poop in the ground. Get it. That's so much better than a porta potty.
Yeah.
Poop hole.
Oh, yeah.
And you do kind of wonder about those things. You look at it and you're like, yeah, that's right. You're eliminating all revenue streams from the toilet situation when you put a hole in the ground.
Big toilet.
Big toilet. Big toilet is changing our lives and dictating how we put.
Well, as people see a revenue stream anywhere, those industries will then start to take over and say, no, you need air freshener. No, you need this. And then
you need 3-ply toilet paper. We need these things.
And suddenly, they have thousands of employees that are accounting on it.
And tons of water.
Poop hole shovel.
Oh, someone excavator. Someone at a screening said in England they have poop knives. What? Knives that are like in the back of your toilet.
I don't know where you hang
sounds
this.
Sounds terrifying.
And they cut up what you've done so that it goes down easier.
What?
After you put it into the bowl, poop knife.
In England.
Yeah, we were supposed to know what that was. She's like, what's your attitude on poop knife?
Poop knife applicators.
And we were like, what?
Say what? But look, we're not here to shame anybody on anything that they do. And, again, this is the most we've ever talked about this subject ever.
In our careers.
In our lives. It's not really what we are. But again, we keep coming back to, what is this honest thing? Let's take this movie back to, here's an uncomfortable subject. And how do we deal with it? How do people deal with an uncomfortable subject? And out of that come stories like Kira Sultanovich, where she talks about immigrating from Russia. I don't want to give it away because I want people to see the movie. But she talks about immigrating from Russia as a 2-year-old and being with her mom in a very stressful scenario and a very stressful situation. That story is – I relate to it as a parent. I relate to it as a Jew. I relate to it as just a human being. The embarrassment and whatnot and how it all sort of comes together. It's a very triumphant story. Brad Williams' story about the dwarf comedian. Yeah. His story, yes, it's about pooping, but very cursorily. Really, it's about his experience. If I told him, I asked him, tell me one story that encapsulates your whole experience as a dwarf, as a comedian in this world, I bet he'd tell that story because it had everything in it.
And since you mentioned it, you guys are Jewish, but you have the least Jewish sounding name I've ever heard.
Sklar?
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of a more Nordic name.
Yeah, doesn't it sound it sounds to me like the wrench that you use for the all IKEA items. Like, hand me the Sklar.
Honey, did you drop the Sklar behind the bookcase?
I was done making the thing, so I threw it where I can't see it. No, Sklar is a Russian name.
Oh, it
Russian.
Is.
Huh. Eastern European.
Means glassblower.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're artists from way back.
I have to ask before we go, Jason, do you actually have a prescription for those glasses?
Yes.
Or is that just like fashion glasses?
No, and I need to strengthen.
By the way, my eyesight is starting to deteriorate just because I'm 46 and it's just happening where it's deteriorating and Jay will not let me get glasses.
You get contacts.
I don't know if I can stick something in my eye, maybe, but it was
contacts,
crazy.
Bro.
Crazy.
I own glasses.
Well, people have to see you guys. You're so great in person. Do you have any live shows coming up soon?
Yes, we do. We have a handful, I can tell you right now. So I don't know if your listenership goes out to Rochester or upstate New York.
All over.
Okay, so upstate New York, Rochester, there's comedy at the Carlson, which is this really cool venue.
Comedy venue.
Big venue. We're going to be there next weekend, so the 22nd through the 24th of February.
Okay.
Then on Sunday, we're going to be at the Bell House in Brooklyn doing a live Dumb People Town
with
the girls from the podcast, the Sorry About Last Night girls are in the, and Christina and Corinne, they're fantastic. Yeah. So they're going to be our guests, and we're almost sold out on that show. We would love to sell it out and then book another show after it, but we're almost sold out on that show. It's like 350 capacity, and I think we're at like 300 right now as we stand over a week away. So that's on Sunday the 25th. And then we're going to Detroit to do like a really cool sort of event at the Fillmore on March 3rd. Then we're in Minneapolis March 17th around
15th. All
sorts of. If you go to supersklars.com and look at our tour dates, you can find out and buy tickets from there as well.
And where can people find out where Poop Talk's playing? That comes out this Friday, right?
This Friday the 16th it comes out. You can go to Video On Demand, any of your cable stuff, or iTunes
or Amazon,
or you can see it in theaters if you are in San Francisco. It's playing at the Roxy.
Okay.
Los Angeles is playing at the Lemley Santa Monica. If you're in New York City, it's playing at Village East. I think it's Kansas City. It's playing at the something
Tapcade.
In Atlanta, it's playing in Atlanta. In Chicago, it's playing at Facet Cinematheque.
Okay.
Cleveland at Tower City. So really,
Toronto.
It's getting
Toronto.
Out there.
So it's like 11 cities. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, go see it. Go see them live if you ever have a chance. They are really two of the funniest people I've ever seen.
Thank you.
As far as comics go. Podcast, Dumb People Town, subscribe. The other one, you changed the name on it.
Yeah,
what's
it's called
the other name of the
View from the Cheap Seats, and right. It's sports, and it's like, this is what happened in the week of sports, and we try and take comedic view, but like Ben Schwartz was just on it, Bob Costas we had on it a short time ago, so good people.
Blake Griffin, yeah, Bill Griffin. Burr, we've had some good ones on that one.
Randy and Jason Sklar, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
In a world consumed by breaking news, one man has the focus to cut through the...
The president's losing a Twitter fight to Juul.
To cut through the...
ISIS won Powerball? Who sold them a ticket? Arson?
Well, I guess when a sick kid makes a wish, they make a wish.
Last Week Tonight with John...
This one just says run.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Every week starting February 18th on HBO.
Thanks again to Randy and Jason Sklar for coming on the show. Poop Talk opens in theaters, streaming, and on demand Friday, February 16th. Subscribe to the Sklar Brothers podcasts, Dumb People Town, and View from the Cheap Seats on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and visit their website at supersklars.com for their live dates and more information, and follow them on Twitter at Sklar Brothers. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.